Welcome to the Fabric Podcast and the conversation we're calling Don't Feed the Animals. Have you ever noticed emotions, reactions, and tendencies just below the surface? It's like we have animals inside us, and if we feed them, they grow. So if we don't feed the animals, what do we feed? Here's Greg Meyer with some food for thought.
Greetings, Fabric. Greg Meyer here. Let's play life book, okay? This is how we do it. Get comfortable, settle into your chair, your car seat, your morning run, wherever you're listening to this message. And if it's safe, meaning you're not driving or running, close your eyes. And what I want you to do is think about one of the things that you cherish most in your life. Let's leave people out of consideration right now, okay? But a place, an object, an activity or experience. Got it? I mean, something ought to pop into your head immediately. These are the things you love. If you can, write it down. Got a scrap of paper or something? Good. Now, what are you writing down? All right, I got my first one. Come up with another. What's one more? Right? Now, I want you to do five. So, stuff I love, not too hard. Could be a long list. Okay, so here's mine. I'm making them up just as they pop into my head, just like I'm asking you. I got my sailboat, the Bondi Waters Canoe Area Wilderness, the BWCA, coffee, books, so that's four and five. Yeah, different vein. Let's go with my ability to run and to move and do active stuff, okay? Now, you got your five? I'll be quiet. I mean, you can like just pause this and finish your list. Let you think here for a minute. Okay, got your five? Okay, here's the bad news. Unfortunately, your lifeboat is not that big. You're going to have to get rid of one of them. Which one will you throw overboard? That means it can never be part of your life again. Pick one. Cross it off. It's done. I'm looking at my list. For me, it's pretty easy. Coffee. I don't really want to give it up, but I know I could get used to life without it. There's this stuff called tea, I understand. You, what's yours? Oops, not all the rations you expected on your lifeboat. Another's going to have to go. Which one? For me, I like to say books because I can always get them online, but that's cheating, right? Can't give up books entirely. I think I'll say, I don't know, I really don't want to give up any of these, but I'll say my sailboat, which I assume means sailing too. That just shocked my family, I'm sure. Now, I'm not exactly sure why, but while I'm a fanatic, I think I can find what sailing gives me somewhere else in my life. So that's mine. Cross off one on your list too. Remember, it's done. It's over. It's gone. Never again. You've got your top three left in the lifeboat. Make it two. What goes? It's the BWCA, the Bondi Waters for me. Yeah, these hurt. I mean, never returning to the Bondi Waters is hard to accept, but I've had so many great experiences there, and I can always remember and imagine, and I can go other places in this home away from home for me and experience wilderness. Books, however, and my ability to run, move, and be active, I just don't see a replacement for those, and they're part of my life constantly, not just on special occasions. So, yeah, I don't want to give those up. So what will you toss over the side? Think it over. Pick one off, cross it off, and then think about what does it feel like to you? Where does it hurt? What thoughts go through your mind as you give it away? Now, you just did a little animal training. Congratulations. That simple thought experiment is actually a very helpful one in clarifying what is really important in your life and why. If you made a list and played along with me, I encourage you to take some time later today to not just think about, but to feel the change and loss in your life around the three things that you gave up, even if it was only in your imagination, and to consider the value of what you decided to keep and how well you are honoring those two things in your life now. We are in the midst of something we're calling Don't Feed the Animals. And here's what it's all about. We all have some animals that live inside of us. That's normal. These animals are feelings, reactions, and inclinations that we experience. That's not the problem. The problem is the role we let them play. Some feelings get triggered, and instead of noting them as part of the landscape of our lives, we let them run our lives. That's not what they're supposed to do. Anger is a good example. I'm sure you've been angry. Who hasn't? You probably felt some anger at something every day of your life. Anger tells you something isn't right. Someone or something is unfair. That's good to know. Whether that unfairness has led you to shame, annoyance, or hurt in you or in someone else, anger bubbling up inside you lets you know that you are experiencing something that needs attention. But, as you probably noticed, if I simply act out my anger, I seldom resolve the issue, and I'm likely, in fact, to have instead passed on that shame, annoyance, or hurt to someone else. Not so helpful. My anger reaction is good at flagging wrongs that need to be righted, and it's awful a helpful motivator in doing something about it, but not a great tool for actually doing it. We all have these animals inside us, and that's fine. They are sources of information, but not of living. They can be on the bus, but they shouldn't be driving it. But because they do get our attention early, by triggering some basic emotions and reactions and inclinations, it's easy to feed the animal instead of observing it and getting the information from it that we should. For example, it feels good to act on my anger. Boom, they deserve that dressing down, that bit of revenge I exacted. However, that short-term relief I feel, while it feels great, it is still, well, short-term. It doesn't solve anything. It just, in most cases, amplifies the problem. So that urge to get even, or a little more than even, isn't something to feed, is it? But to recognize those feelings and to let them tell you that you were really hurt and that you need to deal with it, that could be helpful. Maybe it's even trying to tell you that you should talk to the person, letting them know how they hurt you. Maybe it's all about seeing the side of them that made them want to hurt you, that animal that's been fed in them for years that they had lost the ability to keep in its cage and do this to you. Do you really think they did it just because they're nasty? Or is there an injury in them? An unresolved hurt, pain that they never figured out, that let them give control of part of their lives to what it was that hurt you. Now, I'm not saying that they aren't still responsible for their actions, but to be fully in relationship with each other, we can't only take into account what is happening at the surface. We need to understand and care about what is happening underneath, in others, and in us. Now, sure, this is a lot harder than just unleashing your anger, but hey, it might actually work. That seems like it's worth it. So last week we talked about why this isn't just a good tip to keep out of trouble, but it's core to our very being. Jesus dove into the subject often because he understood that when we are driven by something that isn't true to who we are, we become what it is. He talked about this as a heart issue. The book of Proverbs in the Old Testament, after making a long, long plea for us to be guided by wisdom, not impulse, puts it this way. Above all else, guard your heart, for it is the source of life. This wisdom teacher is telling us that if there is anything that is important, it is this, your heart. Guard it. Keep it intact. Don't let stuff that isn't supposed to be in there. Why? Not because God won't love you or that you are then a bad person, but because that is where your life comes from. You know the old, you are what you eat line? Well, in a much deeper sense, you are what you fill your heart with. Anger, jealousy, shame, fear, defensiveness, critiquing, worry, envy, and 1,000 other animals like them, they are all in you, and me too. And they would like to climb into your heart. But guard your heart. That's why we seek to be mindful of those animals. To recognize them and to listen to what they are saying, but to be careful not to feed them, not give them power over you. Don't let them in your heart. The animal I want to check up on today is one we all deal with, and its name is attachment. You played Lifeboat with me a few minutes ago and experienced a bit of the power of attachment. Attachment is that feeling of loving something and not wanting to lose it. I experience attachment as warmth, being connected to something I love. But when that attachment is threatened, when I consider giving up my coffee, to use a benign example, I feel a sinking feeling. It feels like loss. If loss feels like something, and to me it does, it's in my chest and it pulls me down inside myself and it makes me quiet and won't let me stop thinking about it, which just makes the feeling stronger. Feeling connected, attached to things and people is not a bad thing when it expresses your value of and your commitment to them. That is the information that your feelings of attachment to something or someone are trying to give you. But if I feed that inclination for attachment, it grows into something else inside me. It wants to become possession. I have to have it, own it, maybe control it. And it gets ugly and dangerous. It squeezes the life out of my relationship with the people, the objects, the experiences, the places that I love. Now, you may be familiar with attachment theory relating to newborns and their parents. It deals with the essential bond between them for healthy child development. But attachment theory isn't talking about just any attachment. It means a secure, healthy attachment. Here's how psychologists describe what that kind of attachment does for a child. One, it provides a sense of safety and security. Yeah, we need that. Two, it regulates emotions by soothing distress, creating joy, and supporting calm. Those are helpful things for a child as they begin to develop. And third, it offers a secure base from which to explore. That's the key, isn't it? That's where attachment can go wrong, when it leads to possession instead of growth. This kind of attachment includes freedom. It isn't threatened by it. It empowers and encourages the other to move beyond the relationship. Oh, but it is so easy to feed the animal of attachment and let it grow into an end to itself. It can feel so good to be needed. And once that animal gets big enough and has too much say in my heart, I am no longer concerned about your own good. I just need you to need me. And if I sense you don't, that's threatening. And I seek to manipulate you emotionally or even physically so that you will be loyal to me. And if I have to, I'll attack the person I find threatening my attachment to you. When attachment starts driving the bus, it blows right by that idea of creating a secure base from which to explore. And it turns a secure base into a pair of cement shoes so that you can't explore. That's what attachment does in your and in my relationships with people. But it also messes with our relationships with stuff. Do you realize that almost everything that you can't imagine living without was lived without by everyone 100 or so years ago? Air conditioning, central heat, running water, refrigerators, cars, electricity, cell phones, computers, Amazon Prime, Grubhub. And yet they lived. They weren't even miserable. 99.9% of human history had none of our conveniences, none of our toys, none of what we are attached to. Who knows what you are living without that your children or grandchildren won't be able to imagine living without someday. Now, it's not wrong to have these things, except for attachment, your inability to live without them. Every once in a while, I go to the office, back when we did that sort of thing, and I forget my phone at home. Ever done that? How did you feel? Kind of lost? I've heard a lot of people, including myself, describe it as feeling naked, like something is missing. Yeah, that sounds a little extreme for just forgetting your phone, doesn't it? I mean, I tend to be uneasy until I find an excuse to ride my bike home and pick it up. Seems a bit extreme. Kind of lets me know it's time to take a break from my phone. Now, you might want to dismiss this and just say this animal isn't really such a big deal. These are just silly examples and simply how times change. But I don't buy it. This is about our hearts. It's about who we are. We need to be able to differentiate ourselves from our stuff so that we can differentiate our satisfaction, our happiness from it. We need to be enough even when we don't have enough. After all, what if there were, let me just make up a crazy example. What if there were a pandemic, one that changed all our social patterns overnight, put people out of work, abandoned our economy, refused to give us a timetable for returning to normal, or even a hint of what normal would look like when it came. Sure, at a time like this, everyone is challenged. But here's a question. Is your attachment to the world the way you have known it, imprisoning you so that you are in constant discontent? Or is your well-being independent of that so that you can still be content and able to comply with the changes that are needed during a challenging time? Okay, that's one issue. Here's another. Thomas Friedman, in his book, Hot, Flat, and Crowded, 10 years ago already, said that it would take almost 5 planet Earths to supply all the raw materials for everyone on Earth to live at the standard of living that our U.S. population lives at. And our expectations for that standard of living and the world's population have only increased since then. Now, if we are attached to that standard of living, and it would be hard to argue that we aren't, what does that mean for our planet? What does it mean for our children and our grandchildren and their children, down to the 3rd and 4th generations? We need to feed something other than our attachment. The Bible is all over this animal's hostile takeover of our lives. The love of money is a root of all sorts of bad stuff, it says. Not money is a root of all sorts of problems. Money isn't the problem. It's the love of it. It's our attachment to it. And then it goes on. In their eagerness to be rich, it says, that is to have money, lots of money, enough to trust it to take care of oneself, to meet one's needs, and that's what I consider the desire to be rich to be the desire for. In their eagerness to be rich, some people have wandered away from their trust in God and pierced themselves with many pains. Yeah, you've seen that, haven't you? It hurts. These animals, they've got claws and teeth and thorns. Roses are lovely to look at and to smell, but don't grab one too tightly. But what really brings the animal of attachment into focus was when Jesus said this: "Don't worry about what you will eat or what you will wear, for life is more than food and the body more than clothing." Then he finishes with this. He says something that we all already know, but we don't want to admit it. He says, "For where your treasure is, whatever you really value, whatever that last thing left on the lifeboat is, there will your heart be also." There's the heart again. He's talking about it in relationship to attachment. Where your heart is not a given. You can say where you want it to be, where you intend it to be, but that doesn't make it be there. It will be found with the things and the relationships that you are attached to, the stuff that you can't go on without. And while you can make it seem like your heart is anywhere, just right where you want it to be, when nothing is challenged in your life, you can give that impression. When the going gets tough, it will become quite clear where your heart really is. Here's something that we've used often to understand our relationship to the world around and within us. Do this with me. First, clench your fists hard. Think about something that is so important to you. Right? Got that? Imagine holding on desperately to it. You can't let go. Is it one of the 5 things on your lifeboat list? The one you could never bear to throw off the boat? Is it something else? Something that feels insecure right now? A relationship, your job during the pandemic, your income, a future you're waiting for? Those clenched fists are the way of attachment, the way of possession, clinging to something that you are afraid to lose. You know, it's amazing how many times when I've done funerals and we are at the graveside for the interment of the body or the ashes, that those closest to the person who was loved and lost sit by the graveside with their fists unconsciously clenched on their laps. Or they're holding the hands of those next to them so tightly, you wonder if they're cutting off the circulation in their hands. I mean, I get it. It hurts. No one wants to lose someone else. And this is a feeling tied to a climactic moment. It makes sense right then and there. But what about the next day? The next month or year? Was love tied only to that person, to that relationship? our hands have to open again. Still clenching those fists? Now slowly relax them and open them up. Palms upward. You are still holding that which you love, but you are no longer trying to possess it. Is it your child on their journey to independence? Your house, your job, a memory, a hope, a dream? Say its name to yourself. Love it. Cherish it. But don't get attached. So, if you aren't going to feed attachment, what are you going to feed? That's the question, right? Well, not its opposite, detachment. Detachment doesn't have room for investment of emotion, of effort, of interest, energy, or concern. It won't give that newborn what it needs, and it won't weave our world together into the fabric God envisions. So the opposite of attachment isn't the answer. This is a good observation about these animals overall. What to feed in your life isn't as simple, not this, but that sort of thing. Like we said last week, it is more complicated than that because you are more complicated than that. So, rather than your attachment, try this. Feed your interest in the other for their own sake. That's what love does. Love doesn't just cherish the other for what they provide you, but for who or what they are on their own. That seems to mean that your curiosity about the other needs some feeding. Feed your curiosity. And love isn't afraid to let go where the beloved needs freedom. Love is more worried about the damage a clenched fist might do to the beloved than what it would mean to let the other go and grow and explore. In that famous passage about love in 1 Corinthians 13, you've probably heard it at a bunch of weddings by now, it talks about many things that love does, but it never says that love owns or possesses. Love finds joy in the other, thankful for the gift it is to you and the world. Feed your gratitude. Gratitude for what you love, not your attachment to it. Your sense of enough is part of this as well. Remember Jesus' encouragement? Do not worry about what you will wear or what you will eat, for life is more than clothing or food. Feed the sense of enough in yourself. It cannot come from other people or other things. It is innate within you, and it is needed to weave yourself with others and with God. So start with these. Feed your senses of curiosity and gratitude and of being enough in yourself, and you may find that the attachment inside you will not get fed more than it should, and it will stay in its place. There's an ancient sutra that Buddha was said to have taught, which I'm sure is about many other things, but certainly has something to say about this critter attachment within each of us. It goes like this. A man traveling across a field encountered a tiger. He fled, the tiger after him. Coming to a precipice, he caught hold of the root of a wild vine and swung himself down over the edge. The tiger sniffed at him from above. Trembling, the man looked down to where, far below, another tiger was waiting to eat him. Only the vine sustained him. Two mice, one white and one black, little by little started to gnaw away at the vine. The man saw a luscious strawberry near him. Grasping the vine with one hand, he plucked the strawberry with the other. How sweet it tasted. That's a parable worth pondering. I've wrestled with which attachment it is talking about long enough to start understanding that my life is full of attachments, and everywhere I turn, I find another, and I need to deal with it. So, I leave that parable to you. Love greatly, with curiosity, gratitude, and a sense of enough within yourself. And please, please, don't feed the animals.
It's worth keeping this conversation going. Share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. You can also go to our contact page or reach out on social media to share your feedback and experiences, because Fabric isn't an organization sharing novel ideas. It's a community of people becoming more deeply woven. Thanks for being part of it.